This is our fifth in a series of explorations of the laws of life. Tonight we're working with the divine law of supply and demand, and it is a divine law as well as a human principle. And so our question is, what is the divine law of supply and demand, and how can aspirants best harness it? And shuffled the cards, laid them out, and we have the following spread. We have the starting point is the tower, right side up. The tower is number 16, which makes us 7. The counterpoint is the 3 of swords, right side up. The challenge is the 7 of rods, right side up. The purpose is the king of swords, upside down. The endowment is the 5 of swords, right side up. The destiny is the 2 of rods, right side up. The real question is the 6 of cups, right side up. The hidden influence is the 10 of rods, upside down. The spiritual ideal is the Knight of Swords, upside down. And the culmination or fulfillment is the 4 of swords, right side up. So this is a very interesting spread. First of all, we notice that the tower is the only major card, but it looms above everything else, as towers do. And then they're noticeable by their absence or any pentacles whatsoever. And there's only one cup, the 6 of cups. And the rest are rods and swords. There are 5 swords, count them, 5, and 3 rods. So this spread is emphasizing the interaction between the mind and the soul, and especially spirit. And in this regard, I want you to examine or examine with me. Notice the fact that, for example, the tower is definitely energy coming down from above, from spirit, and igniting the top of the tower, the crown. And this pattern is repeated consistently throughout. You look at the 3 of swords. There are 3 spiritual forces penetrating the heart. There's the 5 of swords with the 2 swords over the shoulder from heaven to earth. There's the 10 of rods with all those rods coming down to a point. And there is the culmination, very dramatically, the 3 swords coming down from heaven, the spiritual triune coming down and investing itself on earth. So this is a pattern which talks about this in terms of the divine law of supply and demand governs the
somebody's too close to it.
Governs the flow of energy from spirit into form. And this is something that's going to take a little bit of getting used to, and if I run the risk of being a Johnny One Note here in this reading, but this is the important idea behind this reading and this whole exploration is supply and demand governs the transfer of spiritual energy into form, not the way we gather resources here on earth. Now, of course, that's influenced by the law of supply and demand, but we have our physical economy. We have and with finances and whatnot, which of course befuddles us most of the time, and that's more lateral. That's gathering resources from around the globe and bringing them to a focal point for expression. Here we're talking about recognizing that whatever we need on the physical plane, the source of it is the riches of heaven. again, to go back to the parable of the Christ or the injunction of the Christ, seek ye first the kingdom of heaven and the riches therein, and all will be added to you in the physical plane. A difficult concept to understand, except that whatever we need, and it's not just in terms of money, anything we need of abundance, divine life is life abundant, abundant life. And it's unlimited. There's no limit. We might have $20 in our wallet. That's a limitation. We can only buy $20 worth of goods. But what's in our spiritual wallet is there are no credit limits in terms of spirit. There are no limits to the abundance we can express, not just in terms of money, but in terms of healing, in terms of wisdom, creativity, talent, and so on. So this is a very, very dynamic concept. Now, if you think that you have a proprietary right to anything, then this law doesn't apply to you. You can't activate it. Only the person who has risen above the distraction of proprietary rights, this is my iPad, this is my desk, my house, my tarot deck. See? Well, it's not my tarot deck, it's Palladini's tarot deck. He created it. I use it. But I'm borrowing his creative talent to establish my own connection with spirit. And there's an unending stream of insights that can come from that. We can read the Blue Books by the Tibetan, by Alice Bailey, and there's an unlimited stream of insights that can come from that. But it's not our books. It was written by Alice Bailey, and she was in turn inspired by the Tibetan. So I own a set of those books, and they're on the shelf. Well, some of them are in front of me right now. Well, I own these, but they're not my books. I've written a few books. Those are my books, I suppose. But the point here is that as long as you're possessive in the good old-fashioned materialistic way, this is my car, this is my bank account, this is my debt, whatever. As long as we're guided by this concept of possessiveness, we can't possibly understand the law of supply and demand. And this is what we come across here, just to give you some preliminaries here. The Ten of Rods here, where we don't see we see the guy only from the back, and he's got these ten rods and they're coming down. These are distractions of the hidden forces are the distractions of the physical plane that keep us from understanding the law of supply and demand. We'll get to that in due course.
That card was the fulfillment last time.
Right. It was also, Rose is mentioning that the Ten of Rods was the fulfillment last time. Right. And I think it was number two in the reading, the second card, the counterpoint in the reading on sacrifice. So it's been a busy, busy card. There's also some other similarities like that. The tower. Not the tower. I've got notes down here, but I don't remember. Oh, the Six of Cups was in radiation, law of radiation.
The Two of Rods is...
Two of Rods was in what?
Was...
Purpose in...
Was...
In freedom?
Freedom.
Okay. So some of these we've seen before in earlier readings, which is going to happen more and more as we do more of these. Let me go back now and try to start from the beginning, having made these general observations. We start with the tower, and lightning is coming down from the heavens and stirring up, well, striking the tower, and that's causing reverberations throughout the life. And this is a tremendous example of supply and demand, the way energy comes from spirit. It doesn't come in quietly, subtly. It makes its presence known. It comes in with a bang. And so in your spiritual growth, it's more likely to come in a time of crisis or distress or hardship or illness or whatever than it is in a time of everything's quiet and nice and we're all at peace with ourselves and blah, blah, blah. It comes in when we're shoved up against the wall and we know that we've tried everything of the physical plane that we can think of, and what we need to do is find something better. So we are the tower, and it gets struck by lightning. Lightning is a tremendous example of this principle because, as you know, the lightning comes from the clouds, from the sky down to a magnetic point on Earth where it strikes. And without that magnetic receptor, there would be no incoming lightning. This is the actual, in some instances, the lightning actually originates on the earth and draws it down from heaven, hence supply and demand. The idea here is that spirit has everything we need. It has an abundance of opportunity and potential. Everything we need for every circumstance. We have to get it to come into our life. Okay? And that's where we're going to be blocked, perhaps, by our concept of limitation, our lack of imagination, our lack of building the antikarana. We need a strong, stable structure, the mind, and a strong sense of who we are, that we are, that our feet are on the earth, but our head and our heart is firmly locked in spirit. And so we develop this habit of expecting spirit to act through us. If we need healing, we expect to be a conduit for healing. And in fact, we can become a conduit for healing anytime we want by simply focusing our consciousness and spirit and using our system to direct healing energies into our own system or that of other people. If we need resources, we can focus our consciousness in the abundance of spirit and draw this in. We can't draw in physical possessions or money, because that's something of the earth. But we can draw in the opportunity that will allow us to draw this together. So this is supply and demand. Supply is universal. It's an attribute of divine life. Whether you can believe it or disbelieve it, if as you see fit, but heaven has everything, absolutely everything we need in terms of opportunities, in terms of raw power that we can change from potential into application. But we have to create the system through which this can flow. And if our tower is made of wood, the moment lightning strikes it, it will burn down. We have to have a tower that is capable of carrying this energy from spirit down into form. And we have to understand the power of demand. We have to have a strong invocation, not just a tepid one, not just, oh, wouldn't it be nice to be a wealthy person? We have to have a focus of what we're going to do with this and how we're going to use it to transform life on earth. And then we can, like Moses standing in front of the Red Sea, we can command the powers of heaven to part the waters. if we know how to do that. It's certainly within our capacity to learn how to do that. But again, what I've indicated before is this is our major steps forward in harnessing the unlimited supplies of heaven are going to occur in crises, times when we are completely befuddled. We don't know which way to turn next. We don't understand why this is happening to us. And then we remember, oh, okay, I'll try spirit one more time. And then, boom, we make the contact and we bring it through. But it's going to, as I said, upset and stir up your life. You're meant to recognize the power and start working with it immediately. And it's more likely, otherwise you're just going to turn to the things of earth to solve your problems. See? So this is a built-in aspect of that. We go on then to the counterpoint, and we have the Three of Swords, three swords from heaven penetrating the heart of the sacred something or another, Sacred Heart, I guess. But the important thing here is not the fact that it's penetrating the heart, which most people would assume indicates some kind of unpleasant condition, the pain of getting used to those swords perforating your heart. It's got to be something. But the important thing here is the patterns at the bottom of the card of ancient evil, the monolithic patterns of the residue of ancient evil, which we see again in the bottom of the cloak in the Five of Swords coming up. The whole purpose of this is here on Earth we confront the concretized past, and we have to deal with that, and our role is to spiritualize this. And so as we learn to work with the abundance, the health, and the wealth of spirit, we're coming in, we're bringing these forces in to redeem the patterns of ancient evil. And so, again, this complements the first card, the Tower, in the sense of we're going to be doing this in the process of transforming conditions on Earth, enlightening old patterns that restrict us. There's always a breakaway aspect of this where suddenly we realize how limited we've been in the past and we move forward, but not without heartache or some pain, as we realize the limitation of our possessions, of our goods, of that which we cling to, of that which limits us. So this sets the situation up very nicely. Then we come to the Seven of Rods. This is the challenge. Seven of Rods is a husbandman. He looks like he's dressed up like a tree. He's got one rod that is magnetically lifting up and helping grow the other six rods. He is uplifting. He's nurturing, cultivating the growth of the mind. And he is lifting up his awareness so that he can embrace a broader and broader scope. He's embodying the principle of growth. Growth and responsibility. So, in a sense, he symbolizes the ideal patterns of economy, of frugality, of taking what you inherit or cultivate or are able to do and make the most out of it. But the goal is always enrichment. So even though he's working with these elements below the mean, the idea is he's helping them grow up and become stronger and more powerful, and he's imbuing them with the qualities of spirit. The One of the things that DK talks about in the Blue Books, the Tibetan, is that we spend, humanity as a whole, is distracted by money. And we tend to spend money on materialist things. Obviously, you know, we need shelter and we need food and we need transportation. But he is advocating that we, one of the ways that we break this hammer hold on abundance is by gradually seeing, shifting the focus of the use of money from mere survival to refinement and finally to transcendence. And that's what this is. For example, he said one of the few areas that, and this was speaking 70 years ago, so is I don't think it's terribly applicable anymore, but he said one of the few areas at that time that humanity was spending on money on non-materialistic things was in education. Well, of course, that's gone downhill tremendously since that time. But in terms of things that elevate the human consciousness, they're always at the tail end of everybody's list. We know that poignantly from trying to run a nonprofit corporation, Light, to promote our books, get them published, and maintain other works of enlightenment in the public purview. And, you know, we understand very poignantly that pretty much we're at the end of everybody's list. If they don't run out of money and they have some left over, it goes to Light. But it goes to Light after all these other things are paid and after all these other charities are taken care of and after... And this is, you know, there aren't too many opportunities that most people have to funnel money into spiritual applications, but we see that. And I understand that. But that's how little there is of a correct operation of supply and demand. Because the principle of supply and demand is that the supply is unlimited, but you've got to demand it. You've got to see the need and how to apply it in order to tap it. So we're settling for a mere pittance of the supply because we don't know how to funnel the demand. We don't know how to direct the demand and say, let's cooperate with spirit for a change. Let's fund the various programs that the Tibetan has unleashed on the world and see what could be done. Well, we're only about 100,000 years away from being able to do that because the idea of philanthropy, even modern philanthropy, is mostly materialistic. How do we cure cancer? Well, that's a nice idea, but we spend millions and millions of dollars every year on the pursuit of cancer, missing it entirely, missing the cause of it. And we don't spend, we spend a pittance on promoting spirituality, truly uplifting the human consciousness. So we have what we have here is, in the Seven of Rods, it suggests a matrix or a structure. The economy, human economy, is a matrix of materialist force. There is a much greater matrix above the mean in the realm of spirit, which is the matrix of divine abundance. And if we ever learn how to tap into that and access it, we can use it to break down all the limitations, break down, reverse our thinking, and have never-ending, constantly flowing abundance or health or whatever energy we need, sustenance. So that's the Seven of Rods. Now we come down to its counterpart, the purpose, and we have the King of Swords. The King of Swords is the king. And it refers to spiritual mastery. And the idea here is that in order to really harness the law of supply and demand, we have to achieve mastery, spiritual mastery of materialism. We are not somewhere halfway between material or spirit. We are spirit come to earth and mastering the material forces of life. And so we have to be able to harness spiritual authority and divine will in order to tap supply and demand, harness the principle of supply and demand. This is not something that wells up out of the earth. The earth can cry out, the people of the earth can cry out from time to time, help us in our desperation, God. But that's not demand. That's a plaint, a plaintive cry for help. It is the agent of light, the magician, not that he's in this display, but the agent of light that comes down and says, this is God's will, and acts with that authority, and then can precipitate the unlimited supply that he is aware of at the inner levels of life. All right, I'm going to unmute for a moment here and ask if there's any comments or questions thus far before we tackle the endowment and then the destiny.
Interesting that the towers will come up and the reflection on the storm and the tower in light of the storms we just had, and in terms of
white, you know, God's favorite tune is Stormy Weather.
Well, in terms of supply and demand, I've been reflecting a lot over the last week about the resources that we have, you know, in our own minds and through our spiritual connections that we never think to tap except in a crisis.
Right. Exactly. That's what the tower is all about. Good. Anybody else? All right. Well, let's go ahead. I won't mute this again unless I need to. But we move over to the endowment here. And we have the Five of Swords. This is a very significant card here. There's the agent with two swords over his left shoulder. He's got a little helmet on there. And we just watched for about the 10th time the Golden Child. It's the kind of helmet that
her father?
Yeah, her father, the Tibetan monk, was wearing. Yeah. Anyway, he's got a sword planted firmly in the ground, very much like the tower, and then two more swords in the foreground crossed in conflict. And this is the conduit. This is the Anacharana. The endowment is that we have to build the Anacharana. We have to meditate. We have to learn about the soul. We have to learn about the monad. And we have to make these connections before any of this makes any sense in our life. This is for the law of spiritual demand, the law of supply and demand, is for aspirants and disciples and initiates on the spiritual path, not for average humans in life today. They wouldn't comprehend this. They wouldn't understand it. The best they can do is pray occasionally and say, God, deliver me from this mess I've made. But this is a very clear statement that building the Anacharana, is the building the conduit from heaven to earth, is a vital first step. Knowing that your antennae are constantly connected to the soul, and that when you need help, you can call on unlimited resources, bingo, and I've, you know, spent the last 40 years trying to drum this into your heads, and to some degree I've succeeded, I think, and I hope you do too. But the point is, it needs to become second nature to turn to spirit for help and assistance in normal conduct of life, not just in crises, but in the normal conduct of life. As energies create conflict, as duality always will, in the foreground, you need to realize that you can bring in whatever resources are necessary to repair the situation. And you're incorporating this energy into old patterns. Notice the bottom of his robe. You're taking these old patterns and you're creating a new matrix that starts with the premise of heaven is an unlimited supply of everything we need. And therefore, I'm going to demonstrate how that can activate physical plane activities. And in this context, you begin to understand that those lightning strikes of the tower are not quite so devastating as you think. It's the old example that I've given for years and years and years. I haven't used it for a while, but
2x4.
Yes, it's the 2x4. Rose knew that it was coming. The soul starts by trying to tickle you and get your attention with, and you just kind of brush it away and sneeze and forget all about the soul, and then it kind of pokes you in the elbow, and you say, why do I have this pain? And then it makes you stumble, and you pick yourself up and keep on going, and you reach for a glass, and it falls and shatters, and you don't try to figure it out. And eventually, it's frustrated that the person is ignoring it so successfully, so it has to take out the old 2x4 and hit you over the head with it. And that's what happens in the tower. But if you see, if you consciously build the Anacharana, and you're working on a daily basis to enrich the life on earth with spiritual forces, then you recognize the little sneeze, the hiccup, as a warning sign. Here's another opportunity to bring more of heaven to earth. So, you know, instead of saying, oh my God, I don't have enough money, why is spirit treating me this way? We should take the attitude of, oh, I don't have enough money. It's a good opportunity to learn to activate the infinite supply of heaven a little bit more effectively. And just don't expect the dollar bills to float down through the skylight. They come in the old-fashioned way. Then we come over to the destiny. This is the 2 of rods, and the fellow here is holding a globe in one hand and a rod in the other hand, and there's another rod out there. He's creating a triangle. The globe, of course, represents wholeness, the entirety of life. We down here are used to segmentation, to partiality. We talk about partisanship. Everything's a part. Everything. We don't talk about being an American. We talk about being a Democrat or a Republican or an independent. And you see right there, we fracture the wholeness into little bits and pieces, shards. Well, I'm of the old school that believes that if life gives you shards, make Chardonnay. And then drink it, get drunk, and you won't worry about the shards. that's a form of distillation, a form of whatever. But the important thing here is entirety. You can't invoke a tiny little bit of heaven. You've got to invoke the whole thing, and that means you stop putting limits on this. You constantly see the wholeness, partial evil, universal good. Life is whole, W-H-O-L-E. Get used to it. Stop seeing it as a, only in part. And the worst thing you can do is to say, well, you know, I could work a little bit harder and become a better person, but I got another 100,000, 200,000 years. I'll just wait until 100,000 years from now. It doesn't work that way. Time is a complete entity at the level of spirit. We're here where we're segmented by time, and so we have a hard time projecting this moment in time into the future, even to next week, to understand cause and effect. But the idea here is that in order to understand and harness the principle of supply and demand, the law of supply and demand, we have to understand that supply and demand are the same thing. That we're here stuck with the shards, the parson. You know, we're here surrounded by all the pieces, and we have to put them together. But the whole has always existed. And that's why if we're out of sync with something, we feel bereft or left on our own devices, or we don't have enough of what we want or need, that's an illusion created by ourselves, by our own perception. The reality of supply and demand is that the unlimited supply of life is always whole. And so if you remember the basic illustration in the Poe essay, Eureka, well, that was a central point emanating out to a circumference, the outer edge of a circle, and then coming back in on itself. Well, it's a wonderful example. The abundance of divine life is the whole, and then we go back to the central hub and bring that synthetic capacity of the mind to knit everything together. We're constantly working back to the central point from which we emanated. And so when we, in order to activate supply and demand, we have to recognize that the supply is already whole. Not here on the physical plane, but in divine providence, above the mean, it is a complete package. It is whole. And at any point in time or capacity, if we can raise up our awareness and focus on that wholeness, we can call it forth and run it through our equipment to precipitate what we need. That's the dynamic here that we're dealing with supply and demand. So that is our first six cards here. We're about to go to the pillar of revelation. Comments, questions, before I move on.
Carl, I was thinking today, I was reading from Heaven to Earth on Casey, and what you were just talking about, he brought up that to be a medium, that many lives built up to that.
Right.
You know, when he was living his past life, I mean, he didn't even believe in reincarnation.
Right.
But there was something, and in their conversation with Dr. Lightman, there was so much humor that they were able to look back at that. So I think even in when he was living, he recognized...
He is living, by the way.
...to some degree that there was something working through him. I mean, I don't even know if he totally understood it. But that even now he's saying the people in Virginia Beach are kind of controlling all his individual studies, and he's saying, share it, do research on it, see if it can help other people. So he's seeing the whole picture now, but during his lifetime, you know, he really didn't. And yet he realized now that his role was, he was being prepared for that role for like two or three lifetimes prior to that.
Oh, much more than that.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, as you're talking about the wholeness, that even in our own life, you know, we were set up in this life for a specific purpose.
Right.
And even if we don't understand it totally, you get glimpses, perhaps, and as we grow, you know, we do start understanding more.
Yeah. Well,
that was just a wonderful example of that for me.
Good. Good. Well, I'm glad you brought it up. And it brings up, again, I alluded to this earlier, but I want to hit it a little bit harder now, and that is the utter futility of possessiveness, of having possessions. The problem is not having possessions. We need a home. We need, you know, we could use a tent, but it didn't work all that well for the Arabs. So we need a home. We need some food and stuff like that to keep the body corporeal functioning and humming along. And nobody's going to deny that. But the moment you start hearing people talk about losing their, for example, seeing their homes crushed by a tree or blown away in a tornado or any kind of burn down, and then they start talking about, but all my keepsakes are gone. See, there are things that they identified with. Well, if you're identifying with possessions, no way you're going to be able to tap the law of supply and demand, because you're limiting. The moment you use the mind to limit your capacity to think about life, the whole story of supply and demand, the whole idea of tapping an unlimited resource such as abundance or health or beauty, collapses for you, for the person who does that. So we have to liberate ourselves from these expectations. This is part of the detachment from expectation that traps us in small-mindedness, in our possessions, in so many different aspects of life. And people trap themselves in their illness. They trap themselves in their poverty. You listen to people calling in on talk shows and whatnot, and there was a fellow that called in, and Herman Cain was substituting for Sean today, and we happened to hear it, and this guy calling in was saying, it's all Bush's fault, it's all Whitey's fault, it's all this, and Cain just leveled the guy and said, no, you look in the mirror and you'll find out whose fault it is. It's these are your attitudes that you're corrupting yourself with. Nobody has forced you to buy this. And you're just setting yourself up for failure after failure after failure. Man up. You know, become a human being. Stop being a worm or a grub. So we don't understand how much we let our illnesses, our restrictions, our limited funds, our whatever, interfere with our life. But it cuts us off from the abundance of divine life, for sure. Okay, I want to go on. We're going to the pillar of revelation here. This is where it gets good. The Six of Cups here, our lonely cup, is a man and a woman sharing the sublime essences of whatever flower pot that is. There, we have three levels of flower pots here. We have the lower level, which is beautiful in and of itself, but is kind of a more coarse and ordinary beauty. And then we have the next level with two flower pots, which is more sublime and closer to perfection. And then we have the apex of the triangle, the most sublime, the most transcendent, that as they share this essence of sublimity, they're transformed, they're transported into heavenly patterns, into archetypal realities. So we have the three gunas of the Orient, the gross, the subtle, and the sublime, and the indication is clear that the man and the woman are the companions of the personality and the soul, and as the personality and the soul work together to enjoy the common essence, the shared essence, this is the connection that brings heaven to earth. And this is a dynamic statement that we interact with spirit at the level of spirit, not at gross levels. So one question here is, what are we lacking? The coarser level of flowers is quite lovely and beautiful, but it's not the same as the inner essence. So beauty on the physical plane is not the same as beauty at the level of the soul, and beauty at the level of the soul is not the same as beauty at the level of the monad, spirit. And so really the question becomes here is, what are we sharing with spirit? What is spirit sharing with us? Well, spirit's willing to share wholeness with us. It's willing to share life in its entirety with us, our lowly personality, fraught with confusion and dislike and for ourselves and whatever it might be. The soul's willing to share, the monad's willing to share all of life with the personality. But it has to be a mutual effort. It can't just be, well, magically wave your wand and let me have everything I want. No, we have to share these inner realities with the soul. And that means that our burden is to find ways to express these inner forces in our life and give them practical application. We have to be able to share the abundance of life with others and not just grab hold of money and hoard it. We have to invest it. We have to use it to support noble ideas and ventures. We have to, there's an enormous growth curve for humanity to learn what it means to genuinely share material resources. And to genuinely share creative talent. Right now, most people are jealous of creative talent, don't support geniuses. If a genius is able to make his or her way, it's because they find the strength within them to overcome all the obstacles put in their way. But you see, we don't deal with wholeness. We don't deal with wholeness even when it comes to physical health. We fail to understand that the cure for cancer is not something of the material plane. Yes, we may find certain antibodies and this, that, and the other thing that can relieve the problems and help drive it into remission. But if somebody is prone to cancer because they have resented life, until you teach them how to stop resenting life, they're not going to overcome their cancer. So the question here, the real question is, what are we sharing? What are we sharing with spirit? And if you examine that accurately, it's probably very little. But it could be unlimited. Spirit is willing to share unlimited resources with us. We're the ones putting conditions on it. All right, we go on to the next card, the Unseen Forces, the Ten of Rods, and we have this the backside of this fellow. And the sheaf of rods comes down to a single point. He's concretizing energy. Now, there's two different ways of looking at that. One is he's found a way to take the totality, that's all 10 rods, he's taken the totality, combined them into a sheaf, and they're focused onto a single point. So he has learned to express wholeness. He's learned to contact the unlimited resources of life, and through his application, through his work, through his relationships with others, through his citizenship, through whatever, he is expressing that totality in his life, through his life. And, of course, those are skills that every person only has to learn, so that when you're struck by lightning, it doesn't leave you crippled. He's developed the skills to handle unlimited resources with poise and stature. But there's a second possible meaning to this, and that is that he's turned his attention away from spirit, from the sharing that we see in the Six of Cups, and he's focused, he's bogged down in distraction, that the he may even, it may even be the distraction of spirituality, that he's learned a little bit, he's seen the ideal, he looks around and he sees the needs of earth, and he's overwhelmed by them. And he goes out and he seeks physical plane solutions instead of asking the question, what am I lacking of spirit? So it, you can read this either way. This is a two-edged sword here. I prefer to read it in the way that he has learned to harness the totality. But we have to be aware of the potential for distraction. Then we come to the spiritual ideal, and this is the Knight of Swords. And what we have here is, swords, of course, represents spirit. So we have the Knight. We've had the King of Swords earlier in the purpose. Now we have the Knight of Swords. And so he's the journeyman. He's he's mastered the ability to express these spiritual forces and to find practical applications of spirit. He has learned to ask, what am I sharing? What is spirit sharing with me? He's learned to focus on practical applications in the Ten of Rods, and now he's going forth to promote change, to he's going forth to actually do the work. This is a spiritual ideal. This is where the personality and the soul come together and become as one. And so he becomes an agent of the law of supply and demand. This then leads us to the culmination, which is the Four of Swords. And the Four of Swords, again, notice that the Four of Swords are depicted as follows. So the three swords above the image of the knight in armor laying on his bier. And then there's the somewhat weathered, beaten-up sword on the side of his coffin or underneath where he's laying. So there's one sword that was used in practical application by the Knight of Swords. And there are three swords that remain eternal above as inspiration. This is the inflowing force of spirit, which repeats the three that we saw in the counterpoint, the Three of Swords. Now, this is the Four of Swords. And so he has used his acquaintance with life above the mean in valiant effort to redeem life below the mean on earth. But his real power are those three swords, not There's nothing in the armor. If it is, it's dead because he's on his coffin. And so this is the empty shell of armor. And so it's not what we're able to do. It has nothing to do with the physical form. It has to do with the sharing of our life with spirit in such a way that we become the conduit for supply and demand. And that is something that we contact in the inner dimensions of our being, not in the outer dimensions of our protective coat of armor. So this is the final question. What limits us? Just as down here, what are we lacking? Now, at this point, the question becomes, what limits us? What keeps us back from expressing the life of spirit? Are we so entranced in the suit of armor? Are we so identified with the role we play and our ideas and our possessions and who we know that that's as far as we go, and we never turn to spirit? And there are an awful lot of human beings that fall into that category. Or have we learned that in order to tap the unlimited supply of the abundance and health and beauty of spirit, we need to recognize the emptiness of what we possess and allow ourselves to be the conduit for spirit. All right, I'm going to pause here and unmute and take comments and questions. I hope I've managed to make this principle clear. Any comments or questions?
Now, college seems like everything else. It depends on, you can talk it, you can learn about it, but do you really buy into it and believe it and make it your life?
Well, this has to go a step beyond belief. It has to go to understanding.
Yeah.
And that's where we, through our meditative work, we get enough of awareness of the nature of spirit to begin, and we have enough times when suddenly out of nowhere, through no actions of our own, we sense the presence of spirit transforming our attitudes or our conditions or what have you, and we need to collect the memories of those things and put them in a mental scrapbook, so whenever we are tempted to believe, why isn't it working? Why am I being treated this way? We remember to open ourselves up to the genuine sharing of life with the soul. The soul's not holding anything back from us, except to the degree that it may know that if it really answered your prayers or your requests or your demands, you would end up a French fry. And that's the restraint of the tower. So it creates safe situations, safe crises, if you want. So you have a crisis, but there's a safety net that lets you learn the lesson you need to learn and without destroying yourself in the process. Other comments or questions? Rose,
so
do you have one?
It's learning to, whether it's a crisis or just a regular day, it's truly learning to identify with spirit, not others or things, not being distracted by the crisis or just the regular day.
Yeah.
It's keeping identified with spirit.
Right. And so, for example, I've been writing a lot about mass consciousness. I need to do another one here. Should have done it today, but I'll do it tomorrow. We talk a lot about that, and we think, oh my God, I can really sense the depression and mass consciousness or whatever. No, the totality is that mass consciousness is just one of those little parts of life, and the wholeness of spirit trumps that. And so instead of being bogged down in reactiveness to mass consciousness, you rise above it, and then you share the inner essence of beauty with the soul. You don't let, I mean, the real moral of what we've talked about here tonight is that in order to harness supply and demand, you can't allow the personality to put limits on what is possible. Transformation is beyond our wildest imagination. And until we learn to stop imagining those limitations on life, well, we all die sooner or later. Well, that's true, but the deeper meaning of that, as the person is enunciating it, is, well, we all die sooner or later, so I'm not going to try to do anything better than anybody else. That cuts off any potential to for spirit to share what can be shared with you. We limit the soul's willingness and ability to share divine life with us. And it's done in many little tiny attitudes that don't seem very significant, but shut our eyes to the rich potential of what can be done. That's the inner meaning here of supply and demand, that we need to learn to develop the attitude of sharing, not because it's right, but because it works.
Humanity spends so much time being busy, being distracted, so they don't have to pay attention
absolutely.
To the spirit.
Being productive, being insulted. I mean, let's just take that one example here. Somebody that has a chip on their shoulder and is constantly evaluating everything that you say and taking insult at it. Well, how much are they? What they're shutting down the aperture of the funnel down to, and then they're looking back into it and say, I wish I could see the soul. No, there's no way you can do it. You've narrowed the gap down to the point where you can't see it at all. And we do this all when we worry about our health, from the point of view of spirit, just try to imagine this. Spirit is willing to share the fullness of perfect health with the personality. And yet it's not empowered to do so because the personality has this concept of bad health.
Well, I've been born this way. I inherited this body. I can't do anything to change it. This is the way I was when I was born. This is the way I was made. I'm not going to do anything to change it. Well, these are limiting. When the moment you turn that inside out and see that, you realize that the only thing the soul can do is say, all right, better luck next time. The capacity for the human being to contact these resources of spirit is there. That's what supply and demand is all about. Anything else?
Carl, I thought of one other little analogy. When we heard the first response of Supreme Court Justice Roberts, it was like the tower. we were getting hit. But then as we're studying this and we're thinking of the Constitution and all that's implied, people are getting excited about this. What a wonderful gift or challenge he gave to the whole population of America. Now you do something with this.
Yeah. Well, and that's the real meaning of this, because the the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court itself, is one aspect of government. It can't do, many of them have tried, of course, but it can't do what the public's supposed to do. And one of the greatest problems that we have in this country is the passive attitude of, we elect these people, they're appointed, these offices are all fulfilled, and they're supposed to do it all for us, and we have nothing to do with it. No, the true spirit of America is, we have the oversight. We have the responsibility to make sure nothing gets out of hand. And so if we don't know how to repeal a law we don't like, we damn well better figure it out. Because that's our duty as citizens. And that's basically what Roberts was expressing. Okay, anything else? That's it on supply and demand. I thank you for participating, and we'll do this again in a couple of weeks on a different law. Thank you and good night.